Break out the party hats. It's finally time for Architecture, Coffee, and Ink. Hello, this is Hollywood C, and you're listening to Architecture, Coffee, and Ink, a podcast dedicated to introducing concepts, detailing out designs, and tackling the architecture you might not realize the meaning behind. I'm your hostess, and I am here today to start introducing you to the designs that make you wonder why. So I ask you to brew your coffee, grab your sketchbook and pen, and let's begin.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Architecture, Coffee, and Ink. It has been an extremely long time, my designers and dreamers, and for that, I can only say how incredibly sorry I am. If you were a long-time listener and still here, thank you. Your support is amazing, and I appreciate all those who have reached out. I am actually recording with a little buddy of mine. My parents' dog, Adonis, is currently next to me, so if you hear some random really deep sighs and dramatic groans as he reaches out for my plate of food next to me, it's the dog. But it is official. I have just graduated as of Sunday afternoon, hence the fanfare and streamers I still have decked around my apartment. I have officially completed both master's degrees, and I couldn't be happier and relieved. 95% of my photos were of me and my goddaughter with her parents and mine and our other best friend all laughing at us. With the podcast, due to trying to balance everything at once, it unfortunately got extremely overwhelming, rounding the final hurdle for school. But never fear, I am continuing the podcast, catching up on new episodes, opening up who we talk to and why. So, even though I am moving over the next month and have my, quote, studio dismantled and packed up, I will be using a little hand recorder to give out weekly episodes. So bear with the audio quality for a few weeks. The studio is the first part of my unpacking. I very much feel like a reporter in a film noir, sitting in the armchair in the basement next to the fireplace while I wait to catch my flight in a few hours. My only regret is that I forgot my trench coat and packed it up already. So close to being a Bond girl, yet so far away. Graduate school has been both a challenging and extremely rewarding experience, and I am thankful for everyone who has supported me throughout my journey. That being said, the blog has gotten a facelift that is still in process. But feel free to check out the new format. There is so much still to do, but I can finally stop giving excuses because, dear listeners, I was probably the most tired of my excuses, so go check it out. I am so excited to have it up and finally have some items off my to-do list. I feel like having everything, all my due dates, suddenly halt means that I have an overabundance of time, even with moving 800 miles away. Looking back over my education, the end of the year is honestly my favorite part of the semester, because that's when you can see everything pay off. You can see all the hard work of your students come together, all of the knowledge and all of the projects finally woven together. I'll miss attending reviews for other studios and seeing what brilliant things that everyone is capable of. Things I would never have dreamed of. I am probably going to miss that the most. Now moving forwards, I have a lot of plans to continue the various bonus series I started by the end of the year, including the Knoxville and the World of Religious Architecture. So this chapter of my life might be drawing to a close with a bang, but we, designers and dreamers, have barely begun to get started. Now, I do have one unfortunate travesty to announce. My Grasshopper script I was using to randomize the countries we talked about for each case study has unfortunately been a victim of my spontaneous late-night thesis-inspired reorganization, so I will be building a new one to get us back on schedule. For those who are new and perhaps don't know what I'm talking about, I was using a computer program called Grasshopper, which is basically a programming language for Rhino that you can use to input scripts like Python components and plugins and create a 3D digital model. We use it all the time here at school, and I decided to abuse it to create a random list of countries so we could hit all of the countries, territories, and provinces of the world in a truly random order. Not exactly the original intention of the program, but oh well. I'm one of those people who like to clean when I'm feeling the pressure, so while my sink has never looked better, I somehow misplaced the file when I was organizing my computer files by subject and date. To be fair, some of my best designs have been thought up during a spontaneous cleaning break. So, in light of me feeling a bit nostalgic, we are going to be talking about Donald Judd, an American artist whose permanent installations have been a form of inspiration for many artists and architects. In fact, my very first year before COVID, my class actually took a class trip out to Marfa, Texas during our first summer Maymester, as we call it here, which is basically where we condense a semester down into the month of May as a sort of mini-term. But during this trip, we visited his foundation and installations, as Marfa is home to his work, and we will discuss that in detail in just a few minutes. So the photos from the blog will be a bit heavier than normal, with a lot from my trip. Call it a postcard. Once it is uploaded, probably next week, since I will be out of town starting this evening. For some of the exhibits, photography was prohibited. So in those instances, I have some from Pixabay and other royalty-free websites with the accreditation included like normal. This topic is actually extremely appropriate, as a while ago, an announcement was released that Marfa, Texas was actually added to the National Registers of Historic Places. While our primary focus will be on Donald Judd, we will also mention a few of the other artists that have installations. But first, let's understand exactly who Judd is, and how he is important, and just why Marfa, Texas is so incredibly important that my class and I flew to a town 1,362.6 miles away, or 2,192.9 kilometers. Donald Judd lived from 1928 until 1994, and he was best known for his importance in post-war art. This would have been the Second World War, as we are referring to here, with the impact being stressed starting around the 1950s. But overall, his most important contributions lie in his sculptural work and designs, and efforts in the minimalism movement. Now, minimalism, as the name implies, is where the work embraces the minimal art. The ornamentation is really in the absence of details, and was a direct reaction to the modernist movement, as well as to expressionism, or rather abstract expressionism. Basically, expressionism is like Picasso's work. Think vibrant colors, lines, and squigglies galore. Common everyday objects are basically being abstracted into values and representation. In minimalism, it's the deliberate move in opposition to this. That doesn't mean that minimalism can't be vibrant or vibrant color, because many were. It's just that the overall sum of the piece has been designed with very little beyond the bare essentials. I find that this form of architecture does a wonderful job of celebrating the material or the form or function, because the extra is stripped away from the project. It really changes what you focus on, in a good way. Of course, I wouldn't have picked someone to talk about if it wasn't so complicated, so Judd actually hated the phrase minimalism. He critiqued it in a series of essays, and basically felt that the term, or focusing on the label, actually prevented you from understanding and appreciating the art itself. So he was very much ahead of his time. If you haven't read all of his works, he was quite a collector of books and a writer himself, and it is well worth a read. It's on my wish list to get my own copy, But I have read several excerpts from experts from various collections. Now, as we discuss briefly Judd's life, I'm going to be bouncing through several sources. The Judd Foundation and the Chinati Foundation websites and my own travel-worn notes. Now, normally when he is discussed, the focus is on the basic facts, that he is born in Elixir Springs, Missouri. He served in the Army between 1946 and 1947, and in 1948 he enrolled in the College of William and Mary and then transferred to Columbia University School of General Studies. Then the articles will focus on a basic timeline of what year he started painting, metalwork, etc. But that's not the story I want to tell. Because while it is an extremely important, it fails to fully capture who he is, and truly what impact he had and continues to have. So when every article mentions the Army, they fail to express why that is so important. Because yes, while he served the country and was a construction foreman in the Army Corps of Engineers, and you will oftentimes see this him labeled in a variety of weird variations of this, depending upon how much research the person writing the article did, it was also the time when he was first brought into Marfa, Texas. In his writing, Marfa, Texas, and that's written out exactly basically how you would label a city, so it's like, quote, Marfa, comma, Texas, end quote. He writes the following passage, and this passage is written on the Judd Foundation website, so if you want to learn more or see the original text, please head over there. The citations and links will be in the blog post next week. So, quote, in late 1946, I and four other soldiers went by bus from Fort McClendon, Alabama, to Los Angeles, where we inveigled a ride from the Army Air Force to San Francisco in order to be shipped to Korea to pester the world. This was the first time that I saw the Southwest, unfortunately according to the days and nights of the bus. Since everyone knows that nothing is accidental and that everything is fully planned, it is not surprising that I sent a telegraph saying, Dear Mom, Van Horn, Texas, 1,260 population, nice town, beautiful country, mountains. Love, Dawn, 1946, December 17th, p.m., 5:45. So, this is when he fell in love with Texas, and Marfa in particular. And when we were discussing it with our tour guide, he was mentioning how much of an impact the terrain made on the then young Judd. And I'll be honest, I completely agree. This was the first time that I had ever been exposed to the Southwest desert in person, and I personally fell in love. I have amassed so many cactuses and plants from the region since my travels there. But imagining it back then, in 1946, when you don't have computers and Steve Irwin, can you imagine how breathtaking that would have been? Being exposed to such a dramatically changing landscape, it would have seemed like a completely different world, especially compared to the Southeast. So, the original fort that he was in Alabama would have still had rolling hills in the background, and it would have been a very lush green landscape. Scrolling through pictures of the original fort, some very old ones, you can see particularly ones that I've been looking at for this time period that he would have experienced it. There would have been a lot more greenery than we currently see now. So there would have been a lot of open fields and spaces, and I found a picture on the LouisianaDigitalLibrary.org that has what it would have been like in 1929 when it was changed. And it was an aerial view because it was originally Camp McLennan, and then it would change to Fort McLean. McLennan in 1929. And so comparing a very lush landscape, probably lots of rivers, I was actually trying to double check that and see if there would have been a bunch of rivers in the region. And yes, there would have been a couple. There's several different ones like scattered throughout with a couple of trails and lakes and things like that. But comparing that to Marfa, Texas, you would have seen even the plants are insanely different. And I have some pictures of some prickly pears that I took pictures of, as well as cactuses and dry brush. Unlike what we're used to, which is going to be a little bit more lower lying hills, you have basically a series of just flat plains with steep mountains in the background. And so the mountains, for those who don't know, in the eastern part of America, those closest to the Atlantic Ocean, are actually lower than the Rocky Mountains and the other terrains and elevations, even down into like Mexico. All of those were actually formed later on, and so they're a lot taller than what we would be used to. And for me, it was honestly breathtaking to see the height difference between it. It's very, very impactful. So if you aren't used to this, and you're not used to this like heat difference down here in the south, where I am right now, in Tennessee, which is a little bit further from above Alabama, though I have been to Alabama multiple times, it's more of a wet heat. And people keep saying this, and I'm sure for those who haven't experienced it, you may not know what humidity is like in Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana, but it's very, very thick. It feels like you can almost cut it at times. There's a lot of brilliant poetry written about it versus the dry heat of the desert. It's almost like a foreign entity in its own way. And the vibrancy of the skies and everything, it just seems so different and so like beautiful and graceful in a way that I can fully appreciate and understand what kind of transition he experienced when he was seeing this terrain for the first time, as I personally also saw this terrain for the first time. It's very different from your computer screen versus being in it. Now, next week, we're going to change it up by releasing an hour-long episode, starting, reintroducing, and discussing Donald Judd in this interesting town. Due to my time constraints, I wanted to start the conversation this week and let everyone know that Architecture Coffee and Ink is kicking in a new era, and update everyone on what is going on and what will be coming up next week. So, unfortunately, that's all we have time for this episode, as I am quite literally recording in between plane rides. But once again, a big thank you to all my listeners. Please rate and review. If you liked it, loved it, hated it, let me know. Architecture Coffee and Ink is the name for all of our social medias where you can find me or reach out via email. ArchitectureInc.design.blog is a website/blog, and the email is architecturecoffeeandink@gmail.com. And it is all spelled out with the word and. Normally everything else is with ampersand. This time it's with and, spelled out A-N-D. And again, it is always listed in the show notes. And please feel free to send me art, letters, suggestions, firms, projects, whatever. I love hearing from everyone, and I'm always excited to meet with all my designers, dreamers, and DIY enthusiasts next week with a brand new episode. But signing off as always, may your coffee mugs be full and your inkwells never run dry.